Loudon Wainwright III has written a book entitled Liner Notes on Parents and Children, Exes and Excess, Death and Decay, and a few of my other favorite things. Hey, good morning. How are you?
I'm pretty good. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for sharing this book with us.
Oh, my pleasure.
Well, you recently spoke with Terry Gross on NPR's Fresh Air program, and Liner Notes is getting a lot of media attention. Must be fun to be you right now.
I'm having a good time so far.
And you're in New York today, and you're going to L.A. tomorrow?
Actually, today I'm in Washington, D.C. I came down yesterday afternoon to do a book event here last night. But I'm heading back up to New York today and then out to L.A. on Friday. I'm going to be busy.
In liner notes, you sprinkle some of your father's Life magazine columns as well as your own song lyrics in the book. In the same way, your life has been framed with music and writing since childhood. Let's start with parents and children. Tell us about some of those early years.
Well, my parents, we'll start with them because without them I wouldn't be here. My parents met each other in the Marine Corps in the early 40s. My mom joined up to kind of get out of South Georgia, and my dad enlisted at the age of 17 in 1942. Anyway, they met and fell in love and got married. And soon after that, I was born. They were living down in Chapel Hill, North Carolina when they got married, and that's where I was born. But we moved outside of New York, up in an affluent suburb of New York in a town called Bedford. And that's where me and my two sisters and brother grew up. I went to boarding school, same boarding school my dad went to. I talk about that in the book. And then went to college to study acting briefly, but left college, was a hippie for a while. I write about that in the book. And then started to write songs in the late 60s and got a record deal in 1969. And I've been doing, you know, that job for right up until today.
I want to ask you about the 60s part, because you were in San Francisco dropping acid during the Summer of Love, which was 50 years ago this year, dabbling in yoga. How hard was it to remember those days to write about them?
Well, I didn't write about all of the days, but I certainly remember the lifestyle. It was a fun, hedonistic kind of thing for young people to do. And I lived in what they used to call a crash pad, an apartment on a street called McAllister Street in San Francisco. And one of my crash pad mates was Donald Fagen, who in a few years would hook up with Walter Becker, who recently died, unfortunately. And Becker and Fagen would start a band called Steely Dan. But we had fun, you know. We went to free concerts in Golden Gate Park and hitchhiked down to Big Sur. And, you know, it was a wonderful summer. Largely drug-fueled, but I had a good time.
Well, definitely a special time. And you got busted on your way over to the East Coast later on.
That's right. I was arrested for possession of an illegal substance, which was marijuana, in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. And that kind of ended my hippie career. My dad had to come over. He was in London then, and he had to fly over. He had to take two flights to get to Oklahoma City and bail me out of jail. And that kind of shook me up, and I got a job to earn the money to pay him back, and that's pretty much when I started to write my songs. So it was the expression, it was a drag to be busted, but it kind of woke me up a little bit and got me going on my career to a degree.
Tell us about those early days of limos, record contracts, and good reviews in the Village Voice.
Well, you know, when somebody, a musician, a singer, or an actor for that matter, you know, starts out in the beginning, there's a lot of attention, you know, the press. If the record or the movie or whatever that person is presenting is good, then the press is very excited. And so there were some good reviews in the Village Voice and the New York Times. And I was hailed as, you know, the new Bob Dylan, the Woody Allen of folk, the Charlie Chaplin of rock, and my all-time favorite, the male Melanie. And there were initially some limo rides, although that didn't last very long. I had a hit single in 1972 called Dead Skunk. And so those were the limo years, or the limo year, you could say. But then I just settled into, you know, the nuts and bolts of my job, which is writing songs and making records and touring, which is what I've been doing for 45, 46, almost 50 years.
Kate McGarrigle was your first wife. How hard was that relationship with another musician?
Well, you know, it's tough being in a relationship with somebody who does the same thing that you do, because there's elements of competition can arise. I talk about that in my book, you know, that I came out of the gate with a bang, and then Kate, a few years later, Kate and her sister Anna made their first record, and all of a sudden they were showered with attention and notoriety and a few limo rides. So I was a little put off by that. I wanted most of these, you know, because I'm an egomaniac, I wanted most of the attention to stay on me. You know, Kate and I had a very dramatic up and down kind of marriage, and we had two amazing kids, Rufus and Martha. But the marriage itself ended not long after Martha was born in 1976, and that's a thumbnail sketch on me and Kate.
There's a story that you talk about seeing the Isley Brothers at the Deercrest Inn in Banksville, New York, 1964. Jimi Hendrix was their guitarist, and I'm working on a King Records special where Billy Davis from Hank Ballard and the Midnighters talks about helping Jimi Hendrix learn the guitar when he was just a teenager. What was that performance like with Jimmy that night?
Well, it was amazing. Of course, nobody knew who he was yet. He hadn't gone over to England, which is where he was kind of discovered. Yeah, we were just kids, you know. It probably had phony ID to get into this club in Banksville, New York. But we couldn't take your eyes off this guitar player, this left-handed guitar player who had a kind of processed hair and was in a sharp suit and pointy shoes and played left-handed and played the guitar behind his back with his teeth. And it was mesmerizing. And then a year or two later, of course, the Jimi Hendrix experience hit the world.
In the book, you mention a Martin D28 and a Gibson Hummingbird. Can you tell us about your guitar collection?
Well, I've had Gibsons, had that Gibson Hummingbird, that red guitar. In fact, I have a song called Red Guitar. I wrote a lot of my first songs on that guitar. But Kate and I had an argument one night in Saratoga Springs, and in a fit of rage and showing off, I smashed up that Hummingbird and threw it in a fireplace. At the moment, I have three guitars. They're all Martin D28s. And actually, that's not right. Two of them are D28s, and one of them is a model that Martin doesn't make anymore, a D21. So I guess you'd have to say I'm a Martin man, although I have owned Gibsons and a few Epiphones. I had a D'Angelico for a while, but mostly I'm a Martin guy.
Do you have one with you on this book tour?
Yeah, I'm looking at it now. It's lying over there on the couch having a nap. Just changed the strings.
Are you writing any songs on the tour?
Well, I'm always trying to do that. That's my principal job, is to come up with songs. And I was jotting a few lines down on my train journey yesterday down from New York. So whether it turns into a song or not, I don't know. But I'm always fishing for songs.
Do you perform with any of your family members like Rufus?
Yes. Sometimes we get together and form as the Wainwright family. And most recently we did, there's a thing called a Cayamo cruise, where songwriters go out on a boat with their fans and perform. And the Wainwright family did the 2017 Cayamo cruise. That was Rufus and me, Martha, my daughter Lucy, who's a great songwriter, Lucy Wainwright Roach, her mom, Suzzy Roach from the Roaches, and my sister, whose name is Sloan Wainwright, who's a terrific singer and songwriter. So yeah, we go out as a family. I've described it as we're the dysfunctional Von Trapp family.
Well, how did your fans get the nickname Loudheads?
I gave them that. that's people who are into what I do and who go to the trouble and expense to see me, to follow me around and see my shows. And I had the concept of the Deadheads that follow the Grateful Dead. But there aren't many, but they are loyal, and I appreciate them. And I write about them in the book.
And you end Liner Notes with a chapter about the 7590. Tell us about that.
Well, the 75 to 90, what I mean by that is when I go out and play, usually I play from 75 minutes to 90 minutes. So, you know, an hour 15, an hour and a half. And that is my job. I mean, I've made, 27 records and I've done some acting work. But my main job is going out with this guitar and doing a show for people in a club or in a hall or at a folk festival or a rock festival. So that chapter, and it does end the book, is about this incredible job that I've had for 50 years now. It's an arduous job. You know, I have to haul my butt around, which is not so easy for somebody who's 71. But once I get to the place, the venue where the show is, I usually can have as much fun as I've always had, which is because I loved performing ever since I was a little kid. You know, I was a class clown and a show-off. And so that's what I'm doing, when I go out and do my shows. And it's been a beautiful job.
Well, congratulations on Liner Notes. Great book.
Thanks so much. I enjoyed talking to you.
For Local Exposure, I'm Lee Hay.
Used to have a red guitar till I smashed it one drunk night. Smashed it in the classic form as Peter Townsend might. Threw it in the fireplace, I left it there a while. Kate just started crying when she saw my sorry smile. Red guitar was made of wood, could not take the heat. Red guitar, it caught on fire, and the damage was complete. It burned until all that was left was six pegs and six strings. Kate, she said, you are a fool, you've done a foolish thing. Placed the remains in the case and I put the case away. Went to New York City for a new guitar the next day. I bought myself a blonde guitar. I had it for 3 days. Some junkie stole my blonde guitar. God works in wondrous ways.